next on Girlfriend.
The situation begins to change. They go bananas. It starts to be game playing as to get them back on track and get them back on track fast. It's all biology, all chemistry, and then we go into psychology.
Welcome to Girlfriend. It's Relationship Radio Rebooted. My name's Jeff Newman for BDGX.com, and we are with Cynthia Chauvin, a relationship expert, her husband John Miles, who's a certified practitioner of hypnosis and NLP. Cynthia, on right here on BDGX, also on the podcast for Girlfriend, is always enlightening, gives us great advice and great things to think about as we approach different aspects of our lives. Cynthia has worked with over 10,000 women, making her an expert. And today's topic, Cynthia, is called Why Did He Change?
But you do very well.
Also, our building block for better relationships, falling from grace. We'll get into that a little bit later. But first of all, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Why did he change?
Well, that's a question I get asked all the time in my readings. First off, we have to realize that we start out with biology. It's all biology, all chemistry, all, you know, gee whiz, this looks good, tastes good, feels good. And then we go into psychology. So when you start out with biology, which is the attraction stage, and then the relationship, you're getting in there, it's starting to shift, it's actually going to start to be a relationship, it goes into the psychology. You bring up who you are, what you think, what you're about, your past starts creeping out, you start reacting and responding to the issues that you had with your original group, your original pod, your original family, or whoever you came from, or the situation you were in, starts to infiltrate into the relationship. So we start out with biology, and then it goes to psychology, and when it goes to psychology, the relationship changes. And he doesn't act or respond the same way anymore. Usually, she doesn't either.
Does that mean that he's changed?
It has expanded, but plenty of people take it that they change because people's behavior patterns will start to change. Whereas perhaps he was calling every day, sometimes he drops back and calls only every other day. Mm-hmm. It looks like the attention is shifting, but it's not really. It's expanding itself and growing. And now some of his psychology is coming in, perhaps on, gee whiz, I don't want to be controlled. So therefore, the response to her going, after she gets used to having somebody call every day, gee, why didn't you call, is to not call, because his psychology of, I don't want to be controlled or manipulated, comes in, and they start with this little back and forth and back and forth. And so then women will come to me and say, well, I don't understand. He just stopped calling every day. Now he only calls me every other day. And then it's like, well, did your expectation change? Because in the beginning, you were all excited that he was calling, and you didn't expect him to call. Then when you started to expect him to call, he stopped calling. The situation begins to change. They go bananas. You know, what happened? Well, it's because the psychology came in. So that's one aspect. And over the long haul, when you're talking about being in the relationship, you still have biology and psychology, but the biology should always be there. There should always be a spark for an attraction to, a desire to be with. And the psychology will always be there as well.
So what you're basically saying, Bunny, is that women should always wear sticks and scaras, and men should always romance and pursue. Is that what you're saying?
On some level, here and there. And it's not that you can't get kind of sloppy and put your, you know, tennies on and watch TV together.
Well, sure.
That's not it. It's just that you have to strike it back up.
Now, I know the show is called Girlfriend, and you are the proverbial girlfriend to those listening. But advice for men, is this something that we should care about? Is this something we should be concerned with? Is a woman worried about us changing, quote unquote, be something that we're cognizant of as we try to embark on a relationship also?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, why did she change?
Yes, you're right. Why did she start nagging? She never did nag. When I first met her, she wasn't a nagger.
Do you really get that question after a month or 6 weeks in a relationship? Why did he change?
Yes, I do.
Couldn't it be that the woman's just starting to get to know the person a little bit better?
You would think they would go to that, but usually...
Well, let's put this in the context real quickly that you were talking. This is a single woman who are coming that have a whole set of life priorities. They're not in a relationship. They're not, presumably they don't have the comfort of a relationship. So when something happens that they're getting into a relationship, they might be hyper-focused.
That's right. They're focused on every little thing as to whether or not he texts 3 times or 2 times or once, or he didn't text today, or he didn't email today, or he didn't call today. And gee whiz, he called 3 days in a row, and then he didn't call me Friday. You know, you would not, you just wouldn't believe how anal retentive people get over every last little behavior pattern. Now,
this is so true. I've been watching Cynthia work with women now for over, like, over 10,000 women. I'm telling you that
doesn't matter their age. You would think that that was somewhere in, you know, maybe you do that in your 20s, but 20s to 60s is my range of people that come to me. Mm-hmm. And from 20 to 60, I see the same thing. It may just be, you know, prefaced a little different.
Are women resistant to advice? For instance, be patient. How do they react when you give them? And let me ask a question. What is your advice if you feel that they're being impatient or unreasonable?
Well, my suggestion is that the relationship is actually going into a relationship, that they're taking it out of biology and now it's coming into psychology. So you have to start looking at your actions and reactions to and responses to whatever it is that's going on. You're having a conversation. What are your responses now? Or are you present with this individual? Or are you in your past talking to him like he is part of your past? You know, in other words, projecting onto him your issues? Are you clear? Are you present? Are you over anxious about whether he's going to call because of some other relationship that didn't work out? You know, find out what's going on with him. Most of the time, it's adjustment cycle where it's going into a more relaxed environment where you get to know our pathologies that run us. You know, what is in the back of your mind starts coming out. And if you can take it over the hump and don't start reacting aggressively or they usually do one of two things. Either they start going, well, he's not respecting me because he's not calling me like he was, which, of course, I think is ridiculous. Or I'm not going to take his call next time. It starts to be game playing as to get him back on track and get him back on track fast. Which, of course, never gets anything back on track, because then the other person, the person that's on the other side of the equation, whether it be male or female, whoever is trying to get the person back on track, the other person starts rebelling.
So what's the antidote for women?
To know it's going to shift. It's got to shift. And when it starts to shift to being in a relationship, start looking at yourself, your behavior, your attitude, and be grateful that you got somebody to talk to, and don't run them off till you find out whether or not he is grade A, you know? Don't just assume and throw them in a bag and say, yeah.
Do women actually do that? Women?
Oh, yeah,
women,
they get hyper-anal, and he's not respecting me. He didn't call me on Tuesday. I'm not going to answer the phone. He's not going to play that game with me.
Does the word selfishness ever come in? And does one need to be unselfish to be in a successful relationship?
I wonder what selfishness is. Does that mean that you prioritize sometimes your own personal needs?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
or more than sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess there is a point of narcissism, but that's different in my mind's eye. Narcissism is a little different. You don't know that you are being selfish.
I think being...
Or self-serving, I should say.
Who's the you here? The women?
Whoever is narcissistic, if a person is being self-serving, that's a little bit different than being selfish. Self-serving, when somebody's narcissistic, they don't even know that they're narcissistic. They just see everything revolve around them, be about them, and should be the manner in which they want it to be in.
Look at it the other way. In order for a relationship to be successful, you need to be unselfish.
You need to be flexible. Both people need to be flexible, which means that sometimes I'm the priority and sometimes you're the priority.
Mm-hmm. But but there's
flexibility.
I mean, where you get into I'm married, my life is over category is when I'm used to watching football on a Monday night, but I have to go to something with my wife this Monday night. I guess I'll be unselfish and do that. Or this is my life.
Uh-huh.
I want to watch football.
Right.
Am I being selfish or am I being true to myself, but maybe not true to the relationship? And everyone goes through that. I mean, the football analogy is a microcosm of everything that goes on in a relationship.
Sure.
Kids, job, travel, plans, grocery store,
yeah,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think a successful relationship only works if mentally you're ready to be unselfish.
Well, we might be saying the same word. I see Cynthia, it as flexibility.
Cynthia had brought this up in terms of the relationship being a third energy, and that can be manifested into children. Obviously, they can be sort of the physicalization of the third energy.
Mm-hmm.
But a relationship is there's me, there's, in this case, Cynthia, and then there's the third energy. The
which
relationship is this whole other thing.
And it requires a certain attendance by both parties. And a certain flexibility by both parties to contribute to it. So, yeah, you can have two individuals that are married but aren't in a relationship. You can have two people that aren't married that are in a relationship. When you take the third energy, the relationship itself, the relationship, you know, you need to cultivate it. But it's like anything else. It supports you as well.
Is it unnatural?
It makes a pyramid.
Is that an unnatural
Trinity, a holy Trinity.
Third element to one's life? Because it sounds, and I've been in a marriage for 25 years, it's hard work.
Right.
So what is your
advice?
It
doesn't have to be. That's the whole thing. It doesn't have to be. All you need to do is maintain curiosity about the individual in front of you, flexibility, and a desire to fall in love. And relationships can be easy. We make them hard. That's the psychology and our pathology that makes it hard. If we're not in our psychology, if we're not in our rooted issues of our past, if we're with our partner in a present-day situation, then it's easy. Because what makes it hard is the trailing issues that you're going to have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you think they only exist because this other person is in your life. You think that, gee whiz, this is why I have the problem. No, if you got a problem, you're going to have it in your relationship. You're going to have it outside your relationship. You can be alone on an island and you're still going to have it, okay? You'll have it with the birds and the trees. You'll still have the same problem.
How do you advise couples to keep that in mind, to make that the priority, regardless of what the minutia is, regardless of what their other problems are?
Uh-huh.
How does that, like a
focus,
mantra?
Focus. Keep the focus. Keep the eye on the present situation. What's motivating me to react and respond? Can I come up and tell John in kindness and clarity and with as much wisdom as I can what is on my mind as a feeling without expecting or rejecting him to make it better, worse, so forth, or change?
We have a
or change.
I mentioned this before. We have a friend who has a cat named Cammy who had some teeth removed, and whenever you see her, Cammy sort of needs to tell you her story about how she doesn't have any teeth, and she just meows at you and licks her. And it's sort of become a metaphor with Cynthia and I. She'll just call me up and say, "Honey, I just need a Cammy. I just need to cam you. I just need to talk." And I just know that it's not a conversation at that point.
Yes.
She just needs to talk it.
You just need the ears.
We just had to do that recently as of yesterday when I was editing the book. It was like, you got to talk me off the edge. Just sit there.
I've got to cam you. You got to talk me off the ledge. And then we understand what that is. That's servicing. I understand that that's just part of what she needs.
And he
point.
Doesn't have to rush in and try to create an answer. Most people think when you put out a problem,
mm-hmm.
And men do this and women do this, both of us do this, that when a problem is presented, you think the other person that's in the relationship thinks that they need to solve it. And sometimes no problem needs to be solved. Sometimes the person just needs to unload.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the other person starts giving out answers, well, why don't you just do this and do that and do the other, they get all pissed off because it wasn't about an answer. It was
right.
about a feeling. So you got to know where you are, where you're present, and communicate that to the other person. Other times, I'm looking for answers. Help me find an answer. I just flat out tell them, I need some answers. Help me dig.
Most right. of the time when someone starts a conversation or wants to depend on someone and open up to them, they don't give that foresight as to this is a cammy moment or this is I need answers.
But
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to feel
yeah,
around
that's
it.
Where the focus comes. That's where the...
It's a simple question to understand in a relationship. Is this biology? Is this psychology? I understand when
pathology.
She needs, but we just have code words, and you, over a relationship,
after
you develop these things. You know, you come up with little ways of communicating with each
right.
other. But the question could be just as simple as, do you just need for me to listen, or, you know,
are we working on this?
Are we working on this and finding an answer?
But that takes focus and that takes consciousness. You've got to be conscious with yourself to know what your need is, to articulate that with clarity to another individual. And then that other individual needs to be in their body, conscious. In other words, not in their past, conscious. Hear you clearly and respond appropriately.
Don't want to go off on a tangent, but I do just for a moment. What about the person who's not comfortable confiding in another? What about the person who internalizes even the smallest of issues and problems? And they could be relationship-based. What's your take on that and how
should they
do it?
Well, then there's no intimacy. And sooner or later, it's going to bust, because when anything that's one-sided gets too heavy, right? So that person will find somebody else to be intimate with. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean sexual. They could have an intimate friend that they release their energy with, their conversation, what's bothering them. They could go to a therapist. But the problem with that is if you take that person out of the situation, then what you have is two people in the same room with no connection between the two of them.
And that happens a lot.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's not a necessity, but you have to ask a person, why don't you feel safe with this other individual that you chose? You chose them, and then you're not going to feel safe in their presence. Why?
Well, there may be a long list of reasons why, but they've decided to internalize it.
Well, most of the time the why is because I said something, and gee whiz, then later on I used it in attack mode. Well, everybody, when you get into intimacy and you let them see your foibles, sooner or later, when they're pissed at you, are going to come back and throw the hand grenade that you gave them. You got to understand that you know, we're only human. But you can move past that. You can grow out of that, I'm going to bring this little juicy piece that you told me about that you did in second grade and throw it at you at your weak moment. You know, and then you can get to the point where you laugh over when you actually throw it. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And it can be a no thing. However, the situation where people go in and there's just two empty souls sitting in a chair, you know, that's not living. That's not life.
And you can say this. I think, Cynthia, you probably have said this, something along the lines of, I don't feel safe telling you this.
Yeah.
And that statement opened
that's
up.
That's true. That's true.
Opened up the next. That brings up a whole other set of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if someone doesn't feel safe, you just sort of have to say it.
And then why are you there? Why are you there? What are you in the relationship with the other individual for? What are you building? What are you creating? Would you stay anyplace else and where you didn't feel safe?
Interesting. We'll get back to our original concept in a moment. You're listening to Girlfriend. It's Relationship Radio Rebooted with Cynthia Chavan, also on the podcast, which you can get at iTunes or at CynthiaChavan.com. That's Cynthia, CHAUVIN.com. Time for us to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of Girlfriend. Cynthia, as we get back to this, you're giving advice, you're giving some practical solutions to life's biggest problems. How do you come up with this? The bigger question is, what actually do you do, and why do these women come to you for the advice?
What do I do, baby?
We know you're an expert.
I am.
Cynthia provides perspective beyond the many years of therapy that the people that come to see her often have. You provide a bigger picture. You provide incredible insights. I have seen people come out of her office completely dumbfounded with the things she said, but at the same time uplifted and enlightened. And in your hypnosis work, you provide a physiological way of uncorking all their enthusiam and their energy.
Bam.
Now,
I'm pretty good.
You've seen success and failure. What has been the single most prevalent reason for failure when you tell someone or break down for them some of the more realistic solutions to their problems?
I can tell you right up, willingness. If the clients are not willing to take the steps, it's not going to happen.
Well, that's true. That's true. However, you can be intellectually willing, and biologically, you still have the same condition go off in your mind.
This is where the hypnosis comes
in. This is where the hypnosis comes in. In other words, behavior is at the end of the trail. All right? Mm-hmm. People try to change their behavior. And when you try to change your behavior and repress your behavior or control your behavior just continues to mount and whatever that behavior is. It just continues to grow and grow and grow. And it gets larger and larger. Mm-hmm. Because every behavior was created from an experience and an emotion for a reason, for a purpose. And most of the time it was a good reason. It's just not appropriate in this situation anymore. So I tell people, don't worry about your behavior. Don't think about your behavior. When somebody comes to me and they say, oh, gee whiz, I've got just such an anger problem. No. Don't worry about the anger. Go back to the thoughts. Mm-hmm. Fill the subconscious mind with more possibilities and potentials. Acquaint the situations that are rolling in your subconscious thoughts, which is your self-talk. Mm-hmm. Roll that with more information. Grow more information. Let the aspects of your mind that are subconscious come into play and realization that they have more things they can choose from. It will naturally change your next thought, your next emotion, and your next behavior.
This is like, don't worry about the flower, worry about the soil.
You lost me halfway through that. You really did. Can you be specific?
Sure. All right. This is where behavior comes from.
Okay.
You have an experience. You create a thought about it. Then there's a feeling about it. Then there's a behavior that comes from it. So if you're dealing with the behavior, you're dealing with the last thing that was created.
But that's what I'm dealing with.
Right.
That's the most important thing.
If you get back to where it came from, because it goes on to automatic. Your behavior goes on to automatic. So your body tells you every time you come into an instant that it feels like this or it smells like this, this behavior goes off. Mm-hmm. That behavior was created to protect you in some way, shape, or form. It could be anger. It could be running away. It could be closing off, not talking. Any of these things. But its intent in the beginning was to protect you in some kind of way. So how are you going to argue with a behavior that was created to protect you in some kind of way, even if it looks like a repression? You got to get back to the source. You don't argue with the outcome. You redefine where the outcome is coming from. So you go back to your subconscious, because remember, it's all automatic now, because it's already been played over. Just goes into your subconscious and the behavior. You don't have to think about getting angry every single time you stop at a light. If that was your reaction and you started a pattern, it just automatically comes up, the light goes off, boom, you're back to anger. So you go to the thought process, to the subconscious, and allow the subconscious to absorb more possibilities, more ways to look at the original experience even. And naturally, your thoughts will begin to change, which will then begin to change your emotions and your feelings and your behavior. And the next time you have an experience, you have a different outcome.
Am I correct in assuming that that doesn't happen overnight? That's a learned, kind of trained behavior?
You know, it can happen overnight, and that's the amazing part about it. I'm not saying you can go out and change every little bitty aspect of yourself overnight. You can take large aspects of your life, and you'd be amazed at how fast, once you start that subconscious propagating information, it just kind of goes on automatically, and people don't even recognize that they've made a change because it's so deep and so natural. The behavior wasn't there, and they'll come back to me and they'll go, oh, well, you know, blah, 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 and this happened and that happened. And I said, oh, wow, didn't you change? You know, and I did. I did. Yeah, you're right. I would have responded to that. I would have gotten angry. I would have thrown a fit. I would have walked out the office.
You're saying that this is as a result of what? Hypnosis?
Hypnosis. But hypnosis can be done with somebody, guided, with the intent to go into the subconscious and expand the realm of possibilities. I do not believe in changing people's behaviors. I do not believe in fighting with their thought process. I believe in adding, expanding, creating awareness. I've seen much bigger help being given to people who want to lose weight by not addressing their weight, by giving them larger resources and thoughts of themselves. And then all of a sudden, the weight, the body relaxes, and the chemical structure of the body begins to respond, and it starts to produce what's in the subconscious. You know, just like in the book, The Biology of Belief, what you create comes from your subconscious thought process, and the chemicals are released in your brain to produce on the external.
We are heading into overtime here. We do this a lot, but that's okay. I do want to deal with this real quick because we do have a building block for better relationships. We may even deal with this in its entirety as a subject in a future show. But very quickly, falling from grace. Can you talk about that, and how is that a building block for better relationships?
I think falling from grace is a realization of when you're in a relationship. Falling from grace is you had your first argument, or you just found out something that you didn't particularly care for in the other person, or there's a behavior or something that realizes that you're no longer in
the Garden of Eden.
Exactly. You're no longer in the Garden of Eden. The honeymoon is over. You're in a relationship, and this is a good thing. This is really a good thing, and people take it as, oh, I can't believe I just had this happen to me, or
it ruined everything.
It's actually not. It's not a bad sign. It's a good sign. Now you're actually in a relationship when you've had that first moment where you have, like Adam and Eve, the metaphor, you've fallen from grace, right. And now you're two people in a relationship. I think that's a great thing.
And equally as important is advice to the confidants, because your sister's going to call you, your daughter's going to call you. You know, your best friend's going to call you when they have that moment. And is that a moment where you're supportive, or do you give advice? And is the advice just what John said, that this is good and it's normal and work through it?
Well, you know, you have to watch your confidants, because usually they reflect precisely where you are. So you need to kind of get out of you got to get out of your natural framework of people and support systems and seek somebody else out that's objective, that's not subjective or reflective of yourself. So I would suggest take that up with somebody else, counselor, you know, whomever you're comfortable with, somebody like me.
That's exactly right.
True.
I would recommend Cynthia for that.
Objective, you know, somebody that's not in there, because they'll give you what you probably are telling yourself. Unless you got a real good friend that's got their head screwed on straight, that is living in awareness and consciousness, then go to them immediately, or her immediately, and say, you know, this happened, and they can give you a bigger perspective.
Interesting. You've been listening to Girlfriend on BGGX.com, also on the podcast. That's Cynthia Chauvin, our relationship expert, John Miles, certified practitioner of hypnosis, NLP. I'm Jeff Newman. I've never changed. And we will see you next time right here on Girlfriend.